So today I want to share with you some of our work on looking at state policies and whether nursing homes invest in internal and or external palliative care. My co-author is Kelly Thomas, and we're at the Center for Gerontology and Healthcare Research at Brown University's School of Public Health. The project was funded by the Shaping Long-Term Care in America project, which was funded by the National Institute on Aging. Dr. Thomas and I have no relevant financial relationships to disclose. So we know little about what type or if palliative care is provided in nursing homes or how nursing homes meet the palliative care needs of their residents beyond hospice. But we know that most long-stay residents have much need, have advanced illness, and most long-term residents are going to die in the nursing home if they're not sent to the hospital to die. But we don't know the capacity of nursing homes to provide this end-of-life care. Beth Hahn and I, in 2007, published an article based on the National Nursing Home Survey, and we found that nursing homes, 17% of nursing homes reported having a non-hospice program for palliative or end-of-life care. I think that was really over-reported, and I'll talk a minute about why I think that. 78% reported having a hospice, contracting with a hospice. I'm going to talk about state policies in hospice and palliative care. And there's been numerous studies that have shown that nursing homes are responsive to changes in Medicaid regulations and rates. My colleague and I, Pedro Gonzalo and Vince Moore and Julie Lima, we did a longitudinal study looking at changes in policy, and we saw that when a state increased its Medicaid rate by $10, there was an increase in hospice enrollment in nursing homes. There was an increase only in urban nursing homes. It wasn't a dramatic size increase, but there was an increase in urban nursing homes. In rural homes, when they had an increase rate, they had a decrease in hospice use. But both for urban and rural nursing homes, we saw that when a state introduced case mix reimbursement for Medicaid residents, there was about a 2% increase in hospice use by decedents. So this research examines how state policies, primarily Medicaid reimbursement policies, are associated with a nursing home having higher levels of palliative care. It's moving on its own. Let's see. And we're also looking at the volume of hospice days, which I'll describe. So to measure the palliative care knowledge and expertise of nursing homes, we used items from Sarah Thompson's palliative care survey, which had been validated and which she and her colleagues have published on. And Sarah actually was a consultant on this project. So we use those items, but we also wanted to know, we wanted to follow up on these programs and understand what programs nursing homes had. So we asked about, we used the same question that was used in the National Nursing Home Survey to ask them about whether they had palliative care programs. And we did cognitive-based interviewing to make sure the nursing homes administrator and DON understood what we were asking. And so a person would say, yes, we have a program, but when asked to describe it, they couldn't describe it. And nursing homes didn't really know, their administrators and DONs really couldn't describe what palliative care was. We ended up having to remove this question, and that's why I say I think that 17% was an over-reporting from the National Nursing Home Survey. We also couldn't ask about staff expertise or training because everybody said their staff had this training. So we went back to using the tested items from Sarah Thompson's survey, which measured knowledge and practice. So we sent our survey. It was a stratified proportionate random sample of U.S. nursing homes. We sent it to about 4,100 nursing homes. There were about 3,700 where we could contact was achieved. That means there was a DON in place, and there were a lot of nursing homes with no DON at a certain time, and we even called back. or they had phones, we could contact them. So of the 3,700, approximate 3,700 we could contact, this is strange, there 62% of the DONs responded or cooperated with the survey. We asked about two domains. We asked about knowledge. There were four scenario-based knowledge questions, and Sarah Thompson, who was the consultant, directed us to the questions where she had the most validity evidence, so the better questions she felt from her work with this survey. So we asked about Mrs. Davis, for example. Mrs. Davis had dementia, and we asked if she continues to lose weight, even with nutritional supplements, will she need a feeding tube? And we had other questions like this. We asked about practices. We had nine practice questions reflecting spiritual, bereavement, and physician care coordination. And for example, we asked, how often do you discuss a resident's spiritual needs at care planning conferences when residents have a terminal disease? Or when residents are at the end of life, how often do physicians talk openly about end of life with family members? So based on that, we developed a palliative care knowledge and practice score. The answers for the knowledge score range from 0 to 4. And for this study to consider a nursing home having a higher score, they had to have a score of three or four. The practice scores range from 0 to 9, and in this study, having a higher palliative care score meant they had a score of 8 or 9. So for this study, we coded nursing homes as having a higher score if they had a 3 or 4 on knowledge or a 8 or 9 on practice. So it was quite generous in terms of identifying them as having higher palliative care. We also looked at the percentage of nursing home days on hospice. For 2009, we aggregated all the nursing home days where there was a resident in the nursing home, and we determined through merging data with claims, MDS data with claims, we determined what proportion of those days were residents enrolled in hospice. And of note, in the survey, 94% of the nursing homes had a hospice contract. So these are the policies we looked at. Hospice Certificate of Need is a program where there's some type of oversight to a new hospice entering a state. So there are 13 states that have some kind of Certificate of Need for hospice. Sometimes it's only for inpatient hospice, but our experience in previous analysis found that the effect or difference it made was similar to whether it was an inpatient or inpatient home hospice. So we just dichotomized this variable here. We also previously, as I mentioned, had looked at Medicaid case mix longitudinally and found its introduction resulted in an increase in hospice. But we were interested in this concept or this practice that sometimes hospice residents are excluded from the case mix calculation, the rate calculation. And this is because some states, once a dual eligible person enrolls in hospice, they consider that person to be Medicare, not Medicaid. And then they take them out of the Medicaid, bundle. There's a word they use for them in the states, but they take them out of the Medicaid group, and so they don't count that person when they're looking at acuity and severity of illness. And case mix, a nursing home's case mix rate in most states is based on acuity and severity of illness. So what happens is when you take that person out of the rate, their rate is lower for all their Medicaid residents. And I've heard a lot of anecdotal reports about from administrators about the money they've lost because they have somebody on hospice. So we're very interested in that policy. And we're also interested in whether nursing homes are directly paid their per diem when a dual eligible resident enrolls in hospice. The regulations say when a dual eligible resident enrolls in hospice, the Medicaid per diem rate, nursing home rate, has to go to the hospice. The hospice passes through that rate to the nursing home at 95% of the full rate. Many hospices will pay the 100%, but this pass-through takes place in most states. There are only 5 states that we know of that pay nursing homes directly and don't follow this regulation, which gets me to our study was in the continental U.S., which is 48 states, but just these policies that are so important, we could only determine them as a prevalence in 2009 for 42 states. So there were five states we couldn't, or let's see, my math here. there were six states where we couldn't determine policies, mostly the pass-through or the case mix. Then I just showed you the average Medicaid rate. We looked at the effect of a higher rate. So this is just the other variables we controlled for. I wanted to point out that we controlled for competition in the hospice industry. Some of you may be aware there's a nursing home Herfindahl Index that is used to control for nursing home competition. So what we did is we developed a hospice Herfindahl Index that's specific to the nursing home. And we looked at, to do this, you basically are looking at the number of patients that had nursing home hospice and the number of organizations that provided that care and how the care is dispersed across those organizations. So a one is the most, is a monopoly. So if you have a Herfindahl score of one, it means that there's no competition and only one hospice is providing the care to all the patients in that county, all the nursing home patients. We did multivariate logistic regression with clustering on state to look at our internal palliative care outcome, and linear regression with clustering on state to look at our percentage of hospice days outcome. So this is descriptively looking at the effect of these policies or the association. We see in states that have CON, which means it's more restricted, the hospice entry is more restricted, there's a higher proportion of nursing homes that have higher palliative care scores. In the second group of bars, we see that in state there was not much difference between no case mix and case mix states, but in states where the case mix excludes hospice residents from the rate calculation, there's a higher proportion of nursing homes with higher palliative care scores. So for those two variables, it gives me the sense that maybe when their hospice isn't as available, they're more likely to develop their internal expertise or recruit their internal expertise. And then the pass-through, having when there's no hospice pass-through, which actually would usually results in more hospice, we saw there was more palliative care, so that doesn't quite agree with the other two bars, but what we saw. And then if we look at the proportion of nursing home days that are when residents are on hospice, we see when there's no CON, there's more resident days on hospice, and this is what we would expect because there's greater availability of hospices. And we see when there is a case mix, when hospice is excluded from the case mix reimbursement rate, there's lower proportion of hospice days in the nursing home. And there wasn't much difference in relation to pass-through in relation to the days. Here shows the Medicaid rate. So for those, basically the numbers I showed you represented the above the median. So those nursing homes that had scores above the median on average had a higher Medicaid, received a higher Medicaid rate. And those that had scores below the median on average had a lower Medicaid rate. So this is looking at the percentage. This is our multivariate analysis. And this is looking at the percentage hospice days. Unlike our previous study, we saw a slight, less than 1% decrease in hospice days when there was a higher Medicaid rate. And we saw no statistical policy effects in the rural nursing homes, but we did see when there's a higher hospice Herfindahl index, which again means there's less competition, we saw there was a decrease in the proportion of hospice days. For the palliative care, we found that hospice, when there was hospice CON, actually in multivariate analysis, we saw there was a reduction in the likelihood of having a higher score. When there was pass-through payment, we saw that there was a reduction in the likelihood of having a higher palliative score. And these are odds ratios, so anything less than one shows a lower, a negative association. When there were higher Medicaid rates, the nursing home had a slightly higher likelihood of having a higher scores. And when, and this is, I think, rather interesting, when there is less competition in for hospice, a higher Herfindahl index, there was like a 2.5 odds ratio or 2.5 higher likelihood that the nursing home would have a higher score. So again, it suggests that maybe not having hospice available results in maybe adding or training your staff in some of the expertise that hospice might, or practices that hospice might do. For rural, these are in urban nursing homes. In rural nursing homes, we did see when there's a CON, there was a greater, higher likelihood of having higher palliative care scores, and with pass-through payment, we saw a similar odds ratio as we saw in urban nursing homes, where there was a lower likelihood of having higher palliative care. So what does this mean? This is really limited. This is cross-sectional, and we had done, as I said, longitudinal study and saw the effect of case mix, but the but we were very limited in this study in that you can't determine some of these things. We tried, we spent, Kelly, who was on this study, Rajni, who is one of my research coordinators in the back of the room, and several other people, we made numerous calls to states, and we could not, in many states, cannot determine when they started removing hospice residents from the case mix. And I think this is a huge practice in terms of access to care, and from what I heard, and we don't see it in the cross-sectional, I believe we would see it if we had longitudinal data. But it did appear that some of the policies that are known to restrict hospice access or to result in lower proportions of days do appear to have differing effects on palliative care practice. So as I mentioned, there are practices in place that appear to affect and we looked at the data, appear to affect the nursing home's use of palliative care and hospice. And there's a lot of other practices that haven't been looked at, and there's been an excessive amount, in my opinion, OIG investigations of hospice nursing home care. And there hasn't been really good studies there to look at the impact of those investigations. Now there's a lot of focus reviews for hospice, both in the nursing home and in the community, and how that is influencing hospice referral and timing of referral, we don't have a good grasp on, and that needs to be studied. There's a lot of practices going on that could be affecting access. I'm very interested in the new CMS Surveyor Interpretive Guidelines. These came out, I think it was around November of 2012, but these interpretive guidelines relate to end-of-life care and advanced directives in nursing homes. And if and interpretive guidelines are basically telling the surveyors what they should be looking for when they go into the nursing home. And I was one of the reviewers of these interpretive guidelines, and they're quite rigorous in terms of what they're looking for in the nursing home. So I am really interested, if the surveyors are going to start to do this, I'm interested in what kind of changes we'll see in the nursing home. They had interpretive guidelines on person-centered care, and one of the areas that my colleagues and I study is culture change in nursing homes, and we interviewed administrators, and we heard from them how they made changes that the surveyors were looking for, and especially dietary changes as well. To tell you the truth, I did this first because that's what the surveyor was looking for. So I'm really interested in how surveyors are going to be using these interpretive guidelines. I actually talked to or emailed with our director of survey, and they haven't done a lot yet in relation to this, but I think they're at the training stage. And I'm hoping that there's more oversight because, as you know, the palliative care needs exist across the time people are in nursing homes, not just at the end of life. And then I just, maybe when we have, if we have time for discussion, is I just wonder what the future holds for hospice care in nursing homes in this contentious environment. There's a lot of oversight. There's some thinking that it's not needed, that nursing homes can do this on their own. My personal opinion, and I'm really interested in integrating more palliative care in the nursing home, but I think there needs to be some external or outside assistance. And so the extent to which nursing homes can provide their own palliative care without this assistance probably varies across nursing homes. There are some really good nursing homes. I'm on the board of a very, very good nursing home, but I don't think they have the nursing expertise, and they do bring in people. But they do provide person-centered, wonderful care. And then also, nursing homes are financially strapped, and will they ever be able to provide the range of services that hospice does if we're talking about end-of-life care? And because you're in a nursing home, does this mean that you cannot get this full range of services because a nursing home is providing the services under Medicaid, the Medicaid payment? And I